Welcome to the Evolved Caveman Podcast. I am Dr. John, the guide for your heroic journey towards greater health, success, and most importantly, happiness. And now, on with the show. Hi, this is Dr. John, and I am thrilled to announce that Jory and I are opening up our retreat in beautiful Costa Rica from September 28th of 2024 to October 5th. Everyone wants fulfilling relationships. The hard part is love is not enough. So many factors can get in the way, preventing ongoing connection, intimacy, and aligned growth. All healthy relationships start within. But when we have unresolved stuff, it can easily interfere with those we are seeking to be closest with. Whether you're in a long-term committed partnership or are single and are looking for love, this retreat will guide you in the heroic journey of healing yourself so that you can be open and available to cultivate the fulfilling relationships you desire and deserve. To find out more, visit joreerose.com/retreats. That's joreerose.com/retreats. Hey, everybody. This is Dr. John back with the latest episode of the Evolved Caveman Podcast. And I am here once again with my partner in life and love, Jory Rose.
Hello. I'm so happy to be doing another joint episode for my podcast as well, Journey Forward with Jory Rose.
And today we are talking about people pleasing and how you become a people pleaser and what the top six issues are for people pleasers to look at and examine in order to become less of a people pleaser.
I am so excited for this conversation because I would venture to guess more people are people pleasers than not.
I see it a lot in my clients frequently.
Well, yeah. And I've seen it a lot in myself. Well, and it's a fine line of when are we wanting to be good partners, good parents, good friends, good daughters and sons? To what point is it healthy to want to please those around us? And to what point is it unhealthy and actually causing toxicity, problems in relationship, self-abandonment?
Well, and I think you bring up a good point because I look at it as existing on a spectrum. So, you know, you want to be somewhere in the middle, like the 4 to 6 range. You know, you don't want to just ignore everyone's needs and emotions and desires, nor do you want to give up all of yourself in order to constantly please other people.
That's the biggest challenge. And I know we've done other episodes in which we've talked about socialization of men and women and different ways in which we show up in relationship. And I think this is going to be especially helpful for a lot of the women listeners out there, because so many women being socialized to be relational and men socialized to be more autonomous and focused on their own self or needs or growth in those different socialization patterns that we have seen. It's a really, really tricky line to know, is this being relational? And how do I change that without really negatively altering my relationships to pull back?
Yeah. And I think you bring up a good point. I was thinking about this earlier about sort of the gender lines in people pleasing. And I would, if I had to guess, I would guess that there are more, a higher percentage of women that are people pleasers than men. And yet I see it a lot in my male clients. And so I don't think it's uncommon in either men or women. I think it's pretty common, actually. So, you know, just to give you guys a teaser, the six areas that you must look at if you're a people pleaser are boundary setting, excessive and inappropriate guilt, conflict avoidance, loneliness, resentment, and figuring out what your needs are. So we'll get into each of those as we go through this. But first, I wanted to talk about, you know, how do we become a people pleaser? Any ideas?
How do we become a people pleaser, Dr. John? Tell us.
Well, to me, it has almost everything to do with the family you grew up in. I'm sure there's some genetic piece to it as well. But and I've been a big fan of, you know, Lindsay Gibson's excellent book, Adult Children of Emotionally Immature Parents. And so I look at it as how many of us had one or both parents who were or are emotionally immature.
And I think it's the vast majority of us, because until recently, emotions were just viewed as a nuisance, things that got in the way of productivity and achievement, things that got in the way of being rational. I mean, I know in my family growing up, a good German family, like emotions were just considered on the side.
So I know what you mean. I know what you mean in the connection between the emotionally immature parent to the continuum of how that causes people pleasing, but maybe explain that a little bit further around how that could create someone to be more of a people pleaser if you were in fact raised by emotionally immature parents, which
yeah, so let me
many of us were.
Let me go over some of the traits of an emotionally immature person. Now, given this is not just parents, this is the majority of people out there in society, I would argue, but emotionally immature people are psychologically rigid, stubborn, and single-minded. They have low stress tolerance, and thus they are emotionally reactive. Reading between the lines, that means angry and irritable. Mm-hmm. They distort reality, they discount facts, they blame other people. They do what feels best. So they weigh their feelings more than what's actually happening when evaluating a situation. So what's true doesn't matter as much as what feels true.
They so I was going to pause.
Perception is everything. Yeah.
Perception is everything. And we even know from neuroscience that a mere thought can activate the nervous system, even if nothing is actually happening. So that's a big piece of this.
It is. Well, because think if you've got a parent that is prone to irritability, impatience, anger, and they believe their anger is justified, they believe their anger is founded in reality, and then you've got a situation where they're externalizing all blame onto the child, and the child's just thinking, oh my God, like, what do I need to do to make sure mom is not upset with me as a survival strategy? And it generalizes from there.
And that's the piece that we haven't said yet of it's about maintaining connection, right? So if you have these emotionally immature people, because when I joke with the question of, tell us, Dr. John, what's the answer here? But the thing that I was thinking at the very root is we are wired for connection. And if that connection is going to be threatened or compromised or fear of being taken away from us, we're going to likely, many of us at all costs, going to want to do what we can to stay connected. It's a tribal innate need to be connected.
Yeah. And it actually truly is a matter of life and death, because
it's a
back
survival.
In the day when we lived in tribes, if you got kicked out of the tribe, the chances of your survival were slim to none. And so there's part of our reptilian brain, or that old part of the brain, that realizes this on a deep level. And so we learn at a very young age, 3, 4, 5, that we've got to put mom's needs or dad's needs ahead of our own in order to
stay
survive.
Safe and connected.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, really easy to understand. Well, my needs don't matter here, because if I speak up for my needs and I honor them, and it continues to have them externalize, be rigid in their thinking, have a shift in the perception from what's reality, and I get rejected, I'm going to learn pretty quickly, don't express my needs.
Right. Well, and let me just continue with the last couple characteristics of the emotionally immature. So they have little respect for differences. So they think everyone should see things as they do. So to speak up as a child to an emotionally immature parent means that you're necessarily going to get blasted or at least challenged when you don't see things in the same way they do, which if they're emotionally immature and egocentric and all about themselves, their needs are going to be primary to them. Mm-hmm. And so you're not seeing reality as they do. So the next one is they're egocentric. So they think like a 5-year-old. And, you know, egocentricity, self-centeredness is a normal feature of childhood and adolescence, but some people evolve beyond being egocentric.
Right.
But the emotionally immature adult doesn't have the happiness and open-mindedness like a 5-year-old. Mm. They're just preoccupied
with curiosity, the awe, the wonder, the novelty of the world around them.
So then the last two are they have low empathy. So they're emotionally insensitive. They don't really pick up what you're feeling. And so again, bringing up your needs isn't going to matter a whole lot to them because they're not going to sense your sadness, your pain, your suffering, your difficulty. And then the final one is they fear feelings. So they over-intellectualize. They're in their heads thinking all the time, but they fail to apply this to self-reflection.
Right. And the emotionally immature person has a deep-seated fear of intimacy. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm expressing my needs to you of more of what I need from you to feel closer to you, that's going to feel very threatening to that emotionally immature person.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I like to define things. So I think of people pleasing as a habitual pattern of putting other people's emotions, wants, and or needs above your own. And the problem with this is if you do it to a large extent, it leads to exhaustion, or it can lead to exhaustion, burnout, illness, self-neglect, and unhappiness. And that's what we see a lot of clients in their, you know, middle age.
And they might not even realize it's even the extent to as a result of their people-pleasing. And I mentioned, I see this a lot in women and their socialization of being relational. It's confusing when especially mothers need so often of the time to put their kids' needs ahead of their own for their kids' safety and survival, right? Especially when they're young. It's hard to know when to bring it back. Mm-hmm. It's hard to know at what point do my needs make a difference. And I often look at, this is one of the things that I'll say with clients, and we can get into the different areas of the people-pleasing. When it comes to the self-abandonment, you listed those last things around, you know, the self-neglect. And that's where I see one of the chronic problems is when I am actually abandoning myself in service of somebody else, because I can hold space for my needs and yours simultaneously, right? Mm-hmm. We can contain multiple truths. That would be the healthy continuum. But when it's self-abandonment of my values, self-abandonment of my primal needs, if it's safety needs, if it's, you know, just expressing my truth to an extent where it is chronic, and I've lost myself in this other relationship.
Yeah, those are really good points. And I think the other thing I look for is a lack of bidirectionality in relationship. What do I mean by that? I mean, like a good, healthy relationship should have give and take in terms of people's needs and desires and wants.
Reciprocity and of needs.
And, yeah, reciprocity. And so one of the great questions to be asking yourself in to check on people pleasing is, to what extent am I receiving something from this relationship? Mm-hmm. And sort of what percentage of the time am I receiving positive emotions and support? Because I see a lot of relationships that are almost solely one-sided, where one person is taking and the other person is giving.
And this is a really, really tricky pattern, especially when you have these adult children of emotionally immature parents who have been raised in a habit of people pleasing, who are now allowing themselves the same pattern in their adult friendships. And they likely have become friends with adult immature friends, emotionally mm-hmm. immature friends, because they're used to showing up a certain way in all of their relationships. And I've seen in a variety of cases in which it feels, well, I'd rather stay connected to these emotionally immature people and be a people pleaser and self-abandon my needs than potentially be alone. The fear is, if I give up my people pleasing, what if I give up these relationships, then what?
Right.
And that's a really scary place.
And we're going to touch on that in, I think it's the fifth point of loneliness.
The loneliness one, yeah.
Yeah. So let's get on with the six issues. And the first one is boundaries. In other words, people pleasers typically have a hard time setting appropriate boundaries. How do you explain boundaries to your clients?
Well, I at the root of boundaries, to know what your boundaries are requires self-awareness. And the key for the boundaries for me is, what are your values? Mm-hmm. And in absence of someone knowing themselves, I think they're really easy to not have a clear boundary. And if one of their highest values is relationship, they might be really loose in the relationship coming at all costs of their own personal needs. So, but defining a boundary is, you know, I love the quote, So I forget the name of it, the guy who says it, you might remember because you have really great memory for this, but he's quoted in Brené Brown's book, Atlas of Emotions, of boundaries are a way of loving me and you at the same time. Mm. And that's, you know, that's the paraphrase.
That's a great one.
You know, a lot of people think that boundaries are a stop sign to somebody of you can't do this. And what I really like to explain when I'm helping clients set boundaries is I'm not available for this. And I am available for this. So it's allowing two things to happen simultaneously. It's what's this, the slower, the stopper, the yield sign, and what's the green light?
Yeah.
And yeah, those are really important components of a boundary because we often think of, I'm not okay with this. That's my boundary. And that's what feels often scary in relationship because then it feels like I'm pushing somebody away. But with greater self-awareness of what your underlying values are and your needs, you can then be open to what are you okay with? What are you available for?
Yeah. I like starting with physical boundaries, like our skin is a physical boundary. And you can kind of radiate out from there because boundaries are kind of a vague and nebulous idea. I think of them as the invisible lines that define what is acceptable and what's unacceptable behavior in a relationship. And boundaries really help you to filter out people who take advantage of you repeatedly.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And without boundaries, we get overwhelmed, we get exhausted, we get run down because we're never saying no to anything.
Which I'm going to come back to the family, core family unit for a moment, because growing up in an enmeshed family system, boundaries were not allowed mm-hmm. whatsoever. And I know this for a fact because I've recently been told the extent to which my boundaries are not allowed. And so in some enmeshed family systems, generally in which there's emotionally immature people at the root of that enmeshment, it can really make, well, I'll speak personally, I feel judged when I have a boundary. And one of the components of the emotionally immature person is they view your boundaries with moral judgment. Mm-hmm. And it becomes character attacks, where now it has me gaslighting my own value and truth of what's okay with me.
Yeah.
You know, and this becomes a real mind fuck mm-hmm. because it's okay for me, but the people who are supposed to love and support me unconditionally are telling me it's not okay. So it takes, that's why I go back to self-awareness at the root of boundaries to know who am I at my core and what are my needs. And what am I not okay with, even if it's not okay with you, for it to not be okay with me?
And I love that idea of the people that get the most upset about our boundaries are the ones that need them the most. Because I'll flip it for my clients, right? And I'm like, look, if you come to me and say, hey, you know what, John, I'm just too exhausted and stressed out to talk today. I'm just overwhelmed. I will say, wow, great job practicing self-care. I totally hear you. I feel you. How can I support you? Versus, you know, someone that's less emotionally mature will get upset with that. Well, we had an appointment. Like, now what am I supposed to do? And so I think it's good to reframe it as, well, how would you respond if someone flipped this same boundary of, you know what, I'm just exhausted. I need to take a nap or I need some time to myself.
And to continue to come back to the emotionally mature person, the emotionally mature person is going to see that as an act of self-care.
Mm-hmm.
But many people are not going to respond to a boundary you set for them and say, wow, thank you so much
mm-hmm.
for setting that boundary against me so you can take care of yourself.
Like,
very few people are going to do that.
Yeah. And yeah, I think the emotionally mature person will be defensive and perhaps be a little bit jealous. Well, how come you get to do that? I don't get to do that. And I think one of the tips I like in this area is to discover where you need better boundaries, firmer boundaries. Pay close attention to where you feel frustration or irritability. Because to me, that's your anger sending you a message that someone's mistreating you or someone's crossing a boundary. And that's an area that likely needs a little bit of consideration and some contemplation around setting a boundary.
And that's why I come back to values. You know, one of the ways I like to teach values is looking at your voids and violations. You know what's important to you by what's missing and what has been violated. If something is missing in your life and it doesn't piss you off, it must not be that important to you. So the void of that thing is not one of your values. If someone has violated one of your values, you're going to get pissed and angry about it. You're only going to get angry about what's important to you.
Right.
So you can utilize that anger, that boundary crossing as insight into that must be really something important to me. Like your example of canceling an appointment, if someone who got really pissed might hold their time as a very high value. Mm-hmm. Someone who's more flexible with their time is like, no big deal. We can reschedule that super, not a problem. I'm glad you're taking care of yourself. That wouldn't be a major value of theirs, right? So
yeah,
I like looking at, you know, wherever we get angry, what's the value that's been violated underneath it? Because that can inform you around where your boundaries are.
Yeah, excellent point. And the second issue is a favorite of mine, an overactive sense of guilt. So I think of guilt on a 1 to 10 scale, with 1 being, I don't feel guilty even when I've done something wrong. That's kind of the domain of psychopaths and sociopaths. To 5, I feel moderately guilty when I do something wrong, but I can let go of it quickly. To 10 being, I feel guilty even when I haven't done anything wrong. And I feel extremely guilty when I've done something slightly wrong.
So as a recovering people pleaser, I would say that I have most of my life experienced a high sense of overactive guilt for not even doing anything wrong.
Yeah. And I think it's true
such
for a lot of people.
It is such a hard place to be.
Because people pleasers don't want to set boundaries because of how it makes them feel, i.e. guilty. Mm-hmm. Guilt's the linchpin that holds together all these traits in order to be a people pleaser. And so that's the other part of this that pisses me off in a protective sense towards people pleasers, is we're really easy to manipulate by using our guilt or activating our guilt. And so this is really important to be aware that, wow, you know, my guilt is really high. Just naturally, I've got a high degree of guilt, and I need to work on bringing this down a few notches. Because one of the cognitive errors that we make is the belief that we are responsible for other people's feelings. And I just want to say that is flat out not true. Mm-hmm. You are not responsible for how other people feel. Their emotions, their responsibility.
It's a fine line when their emotions are based on our actions.
Yes.
And so it's radical accountability for your actions while releasing attachment to what they do with that. Mm-hmm. And if you deliver your boundary in a effective, communicative, aware, polite, respectful way, that's going to go further, right? I mean, if I'm drawing a boundary in which I'm being really harsh, I might have more guilt around it. If I know I've acted in integrity, I haven't, as my recovering people pleaser self is talking, when I act in full integrity of my actions and I know I've handled everything in a way that is in alignment with my values, I've communicated effectively, I've been clear and concise and aware of how it's going to get received, right, to the best of my abilities, I can feel less guilty. But I do want to say one piece that I know is a big component of the emotionally immature person, to tie it back into what we were saying in the beginning, and maybe some of this guilt piece and how our boundaries get enacted. An emotionally immature person is not going to have an ability to really hear or understand you. So it doesn't matter what you say or how you say it, they're not going to be able to hear you. An emotionally mature person will have a much greater ability to hear what you want to say. And so this is tricky when you're dealing with emotionally immature people and you're trying to communicate in the most effective way possible to not piss them off, so that way your guilt doesn't go up, right? And yet we sometimes have to let it be okay if someone doesn't understand us, is going to get angry, which is why I keep coming back to, if I'm aligned with my values, I can turn my guilt down.
Yeah. And I think I want to put a caveat out there to what I said about other people's emotions or their responsibility, or my anger, my responsibility, my emotions, my responsibility. I think that assumes that we're dealing with people that have morals, values, and ethics and are operating with positive intent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can imagine extremes like murder where I'm not sure that exactly applies.
Right.
It still does to an extent, but less so.
So what for those listening who are closer to the mid to high range on the overactive guilt and people pleasing, what would you say, and I've got some ideas too, would be ways to turn the volume down on that overactive guilt?
I think the first step is awareness. Mm-hmm. Just always to realize that we have variability on our emotions as well as our senses, but to realize, wow, I'm at the high end of this guilt spectrum. And so to know that means I can take my guilt with a grain of salt. Mm-hmm. It also, I think we also have an obligation to challenge our guilt whenever it comes up and ask ourselves, have I really done anything wrong? Have I intentionally done anything wrong? Or is this just a values conflict? Or is this just mm-hmm. a miscommunication? Or is this just them misinterpreting my actions? Because when I ask that question, have I really done anything wrong? 98% of the time, I would say the answer is no. I didn't have negative intent. What are your thoughts?
To me, sometimes the more guilty I feel is a reflection of how much I care about the relationship. So I might want to reframe it of, I'm so concerned about the other person as a result of my actions because I care very deeply for them. So is this a healthy form of expression of loving this person, or is this an unhealthy way for me to relate to how much I care for this other person? You know, if I'm over people pleasing someone, you know, out in public that I don't even know, and I don't care about the relationship, if it's just some random stranger and I'm having over excessive guilt, then I might have to worry about, you know, where am I being diffused in other people's lives too much, right? Mm-hmm. And that probably comes from over enmeshment and not having a good sense of self. But I've had to learn that I can still care for someone very deeply and not feel guilt. It's an ongoing practice. Self-compassion comes to a lot of that. Can I let it be okay that this is hard right now, and not need to self-abandon in an effort to make them feel better? Because oftentimes we're drawing a boundary when something's not okay with me, right? Mm-hmm. And if I don't draw the boundary, I'm letting the thing that's not okay continue to happen.
Yeah.
And the other person's likely not feeling guilty for that.
Yeah. And I think the last tip I would offer is flip the situation. So if they did the same thing to you, how hurt or angry would you be?
Well, and I might still be angry and hurt. And that doesn't mean that they shouldn't not draw the boundary and, you know.
Oh, right. Absolutely.
Yeah. And just to go back on the 1 second to the self-compassion piece, I think that's traditionally a really hard practice for people to practice. They can have easier compassion for others than they can for themselves.
Oh, yeah.
And so when they're feeling guilty, it can be hard to let that be okay because we don't know how to self-soothe in that capacity. And to be, you know, my favorite self-compassionate phrase is to say, this is really hard right now. Right now is the key word, right? Because mm-hmm. we're staying really present. And I'm already getting through this. Can I lean into that discomfort of that sensation of guilt? And we also know that leaning in and accepting it helps it pass quicker than ruminating on it. So it's to me a deep mindfulness practice there.
Yeah. The other thing that I just thought of that I will practice is reminding myself that I'm separate from them, from this person, and that their emotions, their issue. Mm-hmm. And I'll actively say that over and over in my mind.
Yeah.
That they are separate from me.
It's an interesting question, though, with the question, have I done anything wrong? Because the person you're likely drawing the boundary with might be saying, yeah, you are. Mm-hmm. And so when...
But think, I mean, like...
But, I'm just coming up with the yeah buts that people might be listening and hearing.
I mean, so if I'm saying, look, I only have 15 minutes to spend with you on this phone call because I've got an appointment, and they get upset that I don't have enough time for them, that's not doing anything wrong, per se.
Right.
There's no ethical or moral violation taking place there.
And those are really simple things. I'm thinking some, you know, bigger family dynamic issues in which choices are being made that others aren't going to like. Yeah. And it feels like someone's doing something wrong, you know, or really wanting to shift dynamics in a friendship to hold space in a different way of, I need to really, really pull back on this relationship because it's no longer serving me. That can feel
again,
bad.
I think to look at objectively.
I get it. No, I'm just coming from the emotional piece.
Problem is to an emotionally immature person, it's going to feel bad to them, and therefore they're going to get angry at you. They're going to externalize. They're going to say, you know, whatever bad things about you if they do that. And that's where I think it's important to say, this person is separate from me. Their emotions are their issue. I haven't done anything wrong. And to have clarity on that before even going into it, ideally.
Well, and I would imagine that the person who scores higher on the self-reported scale of overactive guilt probably would score really high on empathy.
Exactly. Which we're going to get into right now.
Oh, what a perfect segue.
Because the third issue is conflict avoidance. And I agree with you. I think people pleasers tend to feel things deeply and generally tend to have a high degree of empathy. Mm-hmm. And thus they have a hard time tolerating the uncomfortable emotions within conflict. And, you know, since we're socialized to keep the peace, but when we're keeping the peace with everybody else, we can lose our own individual happiness and our sense of self. And so I think one of the things to work on, and this is, you know, a years long project, but getting uncomfortable in uncomfortable conversations is one of the ultimate goals.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this has to do with self-worth issues and work around self-worth, which I think, you know, pretty much everyone I've met, including myself, has wrestled with self-worth at some time or another. But the other piece of it is practicing assertiveness skills, appropriate assertiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you, sorry, did you want to say something?
No, go ahead.
So if you want, you know, think of assertiveness on a 1 to 10 scale, where 1 is I'm fearful of bringing up my needs, to a 5, which is appropriately assertive, to a 10, which is overly aggressive. And, you know, when you first start to practice assertiveness, it's going to feel weird. You're going to feel like you're being mean. I felt like I was being a dick at first. But if you're being firm, respectful, and calm while stating your needs, that's not mean. And keep in mind that every new skill is awkward at first, just like learning to ride a bike. But assertiveness involves speaking your feelings and opinions openly and respectfully, understanding the difference between communication and confrontation, while aggression is raising your voice, raising your volume, yelling, being disrespectful, belittling, name-calling, out-of-control anger. And assertiveness, again, calm, firm, respectful.
Well, and I see that assertiveness as an energetic stance of holding your power. Assertiveness is not necessarily acting out, but it's standing within your power. And you know, as you were talking, John, one of the things that keeps coming up for me is the challenge around not being a people pleaser requires a really strong sense of self.
Mm.
And I'm thinking of myself actually in this dynamic, and I feel like I have only in recent years, and you can attest to this as my partner, and as we've been through so many challenges and growth, the more strong I am and who I am in my sense of self outside of my roles, the greater ability I have to not be a people pleaser because I believe who I am outside my relationships. And for the majority of my life, I was so enmeshed in my relationship, didn't know who I was outside of those roles. Therefore, being a people pleaser was much more difficult because I didn't know so much of who I am. And that conflict avoidance was a huge piece. I don't want to disrupt the peace because if it gets disrupted, then what do? How do I tolerate not just the discomfort, but who I am outside if that relationship gets dissolved or has, you know, bigger conflict. Like, there's many, many deeper layers to all of this.
Oh, yeah. And we're just kind of scratching the surface, because one of the things I was going to say about this last one is I think that it's important, an important skill to practice in those uncomfortable conversations is self-soothing. You know, speaking to yourself, reminding yourself to stay calm, to breathe deeply, like, this is just emotion, it's going to pass, you're okay, you can handle this. I think those things are really important, particularly at first, when you're getting comfortable with these conversations. Because at first, I think, I remember when I first started doing it, it was scary.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if I could handle my own emotions easily.
Right. And to even to allow conflict is also to know, what do I really think? I keep coming back to this question because I see a lot of this within clients. It wasn't just within myself, right? This idea of, I don't know what my own thoughts are outside of these other relationships, because I've been so ingrained to adopt other people's thinking. I might feel discomfort in my body, but not even know, what am I speaking up around, right? Coming back to that values piece. And the conflict avoidance is such a great skill. Or that the conflict awareness, I guess, I don't know what the right word I want to say, the ability to have healthy conflict is a great skill to develop, because it's that I can love you and me at the same time idea of boundaries. I can hold space for what I'm feeling and what you're feeling without it disrupting the foundation or core or root of this friendship or relationship. So it could also be, you know, as we build relationship skills with people and have a greater attachment and security, right? I mean, look at you and I, we have a much greater ability to have conflict the more secure our attachment is. Mm-hmm. When we were more in an anxious and an avoidant attachment style, conflict was much more difficult to tolerate. So as we're talking through this, I'm just thinking, like, the levels in which we're attending to all of these different ideas is really converging into all the things you and I've been talking about on all these joint podcasts and our masterclass series in Love Isn't Enough. Like, it really is all coming together around
The individual work combined with the relational work.
100%.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to not be the people pleaser if you're the only one carrying the weight of the relationship too.
Right. So let's get to the next point after that good point, which is number four, loneliness. And you might be able to speak to this a little bit more than I can. Because I think, you know, when you begin to deal with the first three issues, some of those less than healthy, less than stellar relationships can wither away, because the emotionally immature will bristle and get annoyed at your new boundaries, and they might slough off. And then you might have fewer people or nobody to hang out with. And I think that can scare the shit out of a lot of people. However, it also gives you the opportunity of up-leveling the people with whom you hang out with. And that's critical for your success and happiness.
I'm going to put that into context for a second of how we've been describing a lot of this for a moment. So if the people pleaser is a child of emotionally immature parents, there's a strong likelihood that person has an anxious attachment style, that they cannot rely on the safety and trust of someone being there for them. And they're likely at the root of that might be a fear of abandonment. Mm-hmm. And as long as there's a fear of abandonment, the ability to tolerate discord in the relationship is going to go way up, because I'm going to be willing to stay in a connected relationship as long as I'm not abandoned. That fear of loneliness is so strong when we have not had the opportunity to feel safe, right? It's, I'm going to hold on to any relationship at all costs, because the fear of being alone is much scarier than being unhappy or unhealthy in this relationship. And again, it comes back to, who am I outside of my roles? If I don't know that, that's going to be much harder to enact these new behaviors. And the more I get to know myself, the stronger sense of self I have, the healthier relationships I can form, the more secure attachments I can build, the safer I can feel in expressing myself.
Right. Yeah. And so I think this one's can be a difficult hurdle for many, because that fear may not just be a fear. It could be a terror.
Oh, it's, I've been there. You've seen it. You've witnessed mm-hmm. it. And that fear of loneliness can become a higher value than the discomfort in relationship.
Right.
And it takes an immense amount of self-work to build up who I am, to have the strength to say, I'd rather be alone than be in this disconnected relationship. And I want to share a quick little story of someone I just met recently on our recent trip to Poland. My daughter is living with a 37-year-old Ukrainian refugee who is living in Krakow and has only been there for 2 years since the beginning of the war. And she's an incredible human being who has an immense amount of aspirations and goals for her new life. And I asked her about her Ukrainian community within Krakow. And she said, I really have none. She said, you know, the Ukrainians who are in Krakow are depressed and angry and sad and bitter. And they keep shooting down all of her dreams. And she said, I would rather have no community than the people tell me that what I want to have in my life isn't possible. Now, that takes an immense strong self to say, I'm willing to have little to no community and hold on to my aspirations and dreams than to have community and be told that my dreams aren't possible.
Yeah. And I like that idea in addition to that, of we become the average of the five people we spend the most time with. I believe that's true. Mm-hmm. And we know that who we hang out with dramatically influences a number of our behaviors and emotions, including happiness, including misery, including smoking, including obesity. I mean, there's a bunch of connections there. And so, you know, to look at the quality of the people that you're hanging out with or surrounding yourself with, and I think many times you're better off being alone than becoming the average of the people you're currently with.
Yeah. And
depending on the quality.
It would have taken me a long time to get, it did take me a long time to get there personally, because that fear yeah. of loneliness is so real. You've got to have, yeah. it's baby steps, right? It's not the 90% shift, it's the 1%. And so, you know, it's being able to have confidence in your decision-making, regardless of how it's being validated, finding more like-minded people who support your values, to find community in which you are accepted, not constantly like Sisyphus, right? Fighting that yeah. uphill battle and getting it rolled back down over you and starting all over again. And it's the courage to make change. And I think at the root of it, maybe this is a word we haven't mentioned yet, is courage. Mm-hmm. Do I have the courage to let go of these relationships in which I continue to self-abandon and people please, to honor my needs unapologetically? That's the other word we haven't mentioned yet, is unapologetically.
Mm-hmm. And courage is not a lack or absence of fear. Courage is feeling the fear and doing what you need to do anyway, doing what is in keeping with your values, doing what is in keeping with you becoming a better, more evolved person.
Right.
Well, so we're not going to solve loneliness, epidemic in this one. So there's two more that I want to get to here.
Yeah. And I want to just say, as we wrap up this piece, it makes me think of one of my favorite Anaya Nin quotes that really changed my life, which is, and the day came when the risk to remain tight in a bud was greater than the risk it took to blossom. And I think that sums it up, right? That that's the courage to create the change at some point becomes greater than staying stuck in these patterns that aren't serving you.
Yeah, it's a beautiful quote to wrap up that section. Thank you. So number five is the rise of resentment. And if you never say no, then inevitably resentment is going to accumulate. That's normal. That's human. And what usually takes place with people pleasers is that they give in a relationship. And then they feel or begin to feel resentful when they don't get anything back. Mm-hmm. So, you know, again, I think one of the remedies for this is to look at all your relationships and ask, what am I receiving in this relationship? What am I receiving physically? What am I receiving in terms of material gifts? What am I receiving in terms of emotion? What am I receiving in terms of love? What am I receiving
energy,
in terms of time, energy. Yeah. Any and all of that, because I really have a problem with relationships that are 95.5, 99.1, instead of, you know, somewhere around 50-50, 60-40 with an ebb and flow, a give and take. That's a healthy relationship. There has to be reciprocity. There has to be some fairness.
Yeah,
you have absolutely. To have the self-worth to demand what you are worth, what you deserve.
100%.
And that takes a little bit of work too.
Yeah. And again, if you are listening to this and you recognize, oh shit, I have a lot of relationships in which the reciprocity is way out of balance. And yet I don't want to cut this person out, but I'm really getting nothing. You know, I think of it like, well, okay, instead of spending a whole day with someone, maybe cut it back down to a coffee. And even if that's too much, you know, there are times where I'm like, well, I'll just take a walk with someone that I'm not getting much back from, because at least I'm getting exercise, yeah, right?
Make like, it a twofer.
And then
the other thing I've done in the past was I will make time a boundary, where I would call someone up that would only speak about himself and wouldn't ask anything of me. Wouldn't ask, you know, hey, John, how are you doing? Mm-hmm. And so I'd call or he would call, and I would say, you know, hey, I'm on the way to the office. I got 15 minutes to talk. Yeah. Go.
Yeah.
And pretty soon he got so trained in it, he would call and ask, how much time do you have? Mm-hmm. I got 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So I would make a hard stop so that I could get out of a draining conversation and save my own energy for more important matters.
And to say one more piece before we wrap up onto the last one on resentment, again, we've got to consider when the resentment outweighs the cost of the relationship, of the people pleasing, right? Not the cost of the relationship, the cost of the self-abandoning to maintain mm-hmm. the relationship. And likely if we're people pleasing and we're conflict avoidant and we feel guilty, and we have a difficulty drawing boundary, we're not going to name that we're building resentment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yet I think important to be on the lookout for resentment, irritability, annoyance, anger, because those are the messengers that are telling you something wrong's happening here.
Right.
And that's going to be the, for yourself.
That's going to be the boundary violation.
Right.
Right.
All right. So number six is, what the hell are my needs? So, I mean, I remember coming out of my marriage and I was aware I had been a people pleaser. I was stumped. I was like, I don't even know what my needs are. What's a need? I'd been so focused on making sure everyone else was okay, I'd completely abandoned my own needs. I'd been trained to minimize my needs and emotions in favor of those of others.
Mm-hmm.
And
how did you go about figuring out what your needs were then?
Well, the good news is that process of discovering your wants, your needs, your emotions is enjoyable. And it takes a little bit of time, pondering, reflection. And I think, you know, for me, it was helpful to have a list of needs to look at, even a list of emotions to look at and kind of reflect on things. You know, for the emotions, to figure out what you're feeling, one of my favorite exercises is to stop, pause, take a deep breath, ask yourself, what am I feeling right now? And then tune your awareness into your body to tune into the bodily sensations that are arising. Mm-hmm. So, you know, tight chest, upset stomach, muscle tension in your neck, shoulders, you know, jaw. What are you picking up? And then what can you figure out about how you feel based off of those?
Yeah.
And the beautiful thing about that exercise is research shows it doesn't even matter if you come up with an answer. The important thing is just the process.
Yeah, it's the ultimate mindfulness practice there.
So let's go through some needs just to give a sample.
Okay.
What are some of your needs?
One of my biggest needs is reciprocity in relationship. I would say that's a big need of mine. I have a need for effective communication, healthy communication. I have a need for exploration, travel, adventure, novelty. I have a need for intimacy, depth, emotional awareness. I have a lot of needs, love.
Yeah. Well, those are all human needs. I mean,
but I've also learned to hone in on them unapologetically. And I think that's the key. And I'm going to come back to perhaps some gender differences is, you know, I find that women have a really hard time honoring their needs, even if they know them, naming their needs unapologetically, not feeling bad for what their needs are. And it's likely tied into this people-pleasing behaviors, likely tied into being socialized towards being more relational, where I'm not supposed to have needs. And I want to, you know, let everyone who's listening, whatever your need is, own it. It's yours.
Yeah.
No one needs to validate it. You're asking people to accept it, but no one needs to tell you that's a good need or that's a bad need. If you have it, it is a valid need.
Yeah. And it doesn't always mean it will be met. Because, you know, I can ask, you know, I have a need for intimacy right now. And you might be like, I'm not in the mood for that.
Well, and that's right. But your desire for that, your need for that, that's
I still have
no
a need.
One can take that away from you.
The other thing that I was thinking, like, sometimes needs can contradict one another. Like, I have a need to spend time together. I have a need for time alone.
Mm-hmm. Both are true.
Yeah, I have a need for playfulness and humor.
Mm-hmm.
I have a need for relaxation. I have a need for naps most days.
You do have a need for naps. I support your need for naps.
And I really appreciate that.
And I think part of it is to recognize that a lot of times our needs are not always going to be fixed. They might be, you know, stage of life dependent, right? Now that I am close to empty nesting, as my children have both technically launched, you know, my needs are different now in a different way, right? So life stages can change and those transition are opportunities. And I talk with many women about this who are at these transitions in their motherhood journey of figuring out, well, what are my needs now that I'm not tending to others all the time? It's an opportunity to discover yourself at this stage of life. And that's exciting. That's an exploration that's fun to be had.
And I think looking at it as exciting and enjoyable really helps. It's not like, oh shit, I got to figure out my needs.
No, it's opportunity. Just,
okay, cool. I get to figure out what I need.
Yeah.
Awesome. And you can do a Google search and look up, you know, list of human needs. There's a great one from Nonviolent Communication and just kind of peruse them and see, oh yeah, okay. Just kind of familiarize yourself with them. And then just in wrapping up, so as Jory said at the beginning, people pleasing is not always a bad thing, nor not necessarily a bad thing. You know, think of it on a spectrum. Yes, you want to be thoughtful, kind, attentive, cooperative. You just don't want to abandon your own needs over and over again to do so.
Yeah.
You want to be mindful about when you have the emotional bandwidth to support other people, because you don't always.
And that's going to ebb and flow depending on your day, your week, your mood, your hormones,
life
your sleep.
Events. Yeah.
Right. So I think that takes self-awareness to recognize, where am I at and what is my capacity right now? Like, I love it, love when you tell me, you know, hey, just, you know, I'm really tired today, because then I know that your ability to meet my needs in that moment might be lower than when you've had more sleep. Right. So then I can attend to your needs in a different way without having to abandon my own, because I have information in this relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. And I think one of the other things that I get really protective about with my clients is people pleasers at work, because I think the workplace just preys on people pleasers and they'll work you to the point of burnout and exhaustion. And that really fries me. I don't quite know what to do about it other than to teach the individual how to be more assertive, how to speak up for their needs, how to say no, how to set boundaries, that kind of thing. But
That seems like a whole different conversation
than in relationships. Yeah. And people pleasers. So for what it's worth. And any closing thoughts on?
I just wanted in closing to just recap the six different areas, because we went into depth. So just as people are listening, say, what were those again? So it was boundaries, overactive guilt, conflict avoidance, loneliness, resentment, and knowing your needs. And I think if you recognize these areas or challenges, it's not about that, you know, going from 10 to zero. It's just turning that volume down through self-awareness, through self-compassion, through self-insight, and likely sharing with others. And this is, I think, a really helpful thing. I like to tell clients, you know, to tell their partners, hey, this is what I'm working on right now. And just so you know, if I'm shifting how things are showing up, it's because I'm working on this, because I'm recognizing this pattern hasn't been serving me. So if you have this awareness and you're in relationship with people that you believe want to support your growth and your health and your healing, share them with where you recognize I need to shore up some of my own energy.
Yeah, great point. I think that's a really good point and a good place to end this conversation on.
Yeah, this was a great conversation. Oh, of course. Thank you. There was so much in here. And
I know the other thing I was going to say is if these areas apply to you, if you believe they apply to you, please don't get overwhelmed with the work that needs to be done. Because to me, this is kind of the work of a lifetime. And I like the idea of just getting 1% better every day. You know, if you can just look for small steps in one of these areas and start to build on those steps in a month, in a year, you're going to see some real change.
And if you don't believe it's possible, then we'll hold space for you that it is.
Absolutely.
I'm very proud of the growth I've made in so many of these areas and areas that I didn't think I could ever create change.
Yeah, we've done it.
Yeah, 100%. So
reform people pleasers.
It's possible.
All right. Well, that is it for this episode of The Evolved Caveman and Journey Forward with Jory Rose. Thank you so much for listening. If this episode was meaningful and helpful to you, please be sure to like, rate, review, and share. And if you didn't like it, you don't have to do a damn thing. Thanks so much.
Take care, everyone. Be well.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Evolved Caveman podcast. If you like what you've heard, support us by subscribing, leaving reviews, and sharing the podcast with friends and colleagues. For the latest, most powerful tools to connect with like-minded men, join the Facebook group at The Evolved Caveman. Follow Dr. John on Instagram at The Evolved Caveman, all one word, or join the email list by visiting guidetoself.com.